Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Welcome to Tracking Connections podcast. This is Sarah.
And I'm John, and we're with a friend and colleague from Switzerland, Julia Talk, and she has a fun journey to go on with us today. I'm going to have to do some explaining first, but boy, you do a lot of different things, Julia. You've been kind of in this field for 10 years of connecting people to nature and to each other, and you have a very diverse sort of set of things that you do. Tell us a little bit about your experience in the connection journey and what you're doing these days.
Yeah, thank you. As you said, a lot of different things. And I feel like in a nutshell, I would say the most important thing for me is connecting people to themselves, with each other and nature, and using different tools in a way for that. Like maybe the curiosity, like inspire them to go out into nature through my podcast. I have a podcast and through that, and also through online courses I have, where I share also other stuff, like maybe going deeper into nature connection, the eight shields, and also personal connection stuff, also through rituals which one can do for themselves at home. And the other things I'm doing, supporting people in a way, mentoring, like one-on-one, but also groups, or in a way, organization, initiation, that's also something I'm doing, supporting initiation processes, but more like pioneer projects, like supporting them in building up what they want to build up, but in a connective way. So building the social hummus, maybe to say, like to really let it be connective, and from this perspective, bringing in the perspective of, and this container of connection into that.
That's really cool work. It's so important too, because Sarah and I have been involved with a team working on, what companies would call onboarding, how you train and bring people in, and then how you establish the values and the culture, operating policy, whatever you want to call it, right? How are we going to be together as a group of people working on this together? And it's so important. There's not a lot of organizations that are thinking the way you are, Julia, and it's really important. When people get to work in a project or at a job where connection is the priority, at first they don't believe it. And they are, the word is cynical a little bit, this is airy fairy, this is like they're being all this nice, but it's all BS, it's not real. But then if everyone holds the course, they go through a healing process almost automatically, and they start to realize, wait a minute, they really are sincere. This really is connection. And they're like, wow, why isn't everybody in the world doing this? Why isn't every company doing this, And I'm glad you're doing it. That's what I'm saying, because it's lonely out there. It's even hard to find examples to see how other companies have done it, because they put the, you have to, profit is the bottom line, right? We got to make the money. And yes, of course we do. But there's a wonderful company called Patagonia, which kind of pioneered this idea a long time ago. And they met with such resistance from the outside. But Yvonne Chouinard was just so determined. He's just like, no, this is right. We have to do it this way, so he's been my role model. So now I'm glad that you are out there doing it too. So I'm going to compare notes with you someday, but I'll see what Sarah has to say.
Well, I'm just curious, because I know, Julia, that you just took the HL's master class designing with natural cycles. And I'm wondering how that might have supported, or how the HL's principles may have supported the work that you're doing.
I feel it supported my whole life already. over the whole years. I since I've learned it, and then I went deeper through my own processes and journey and so on. And I think one part of it was before, of course, already that I did the H-Heals masterclass, was when I wrote my thesis, when I did my master's in geography. And I had this thing of, okay, I want to combine it, like to bring it together. The connection was there to bring what I learned through nature connection and, yeah, the H-Heals, to bring it into that field of even companies, how they can use it. And there, I think it started already, to how to translate that to how a company could use that. So I made this model, like I used the model of the H-Heals to see how it is working for companies. And I had some two companies as examples, two different companies as examples, to see how are those archetypes expressed in these companies. And then to also answer your question to the H-Heals Masterclass, I mean, this was 2018 when I wrote the thesis. And over the years, I always had this vision, okay, I want to bring that into these different fields of how organizations can use that. And to see, okay, as you said, John, it's a bridge I am going to build, because for the normal, whatever normal is, but like from the maybe, mainstream perspective, there's no time for it. We don't have time for that. And then I had, really an interesting project with a bicycle, like a small bicycle store, where I had this task to do, okay, or like I saw the task to bring in the H-Heals principles into that field of a bicycle store, to how can it be more connective, maybe how, what can they do differently from those archetype perspective of how it is running and how it could run differently in a more connective way on all different levels, with all the different layers of the H-Heals and directions. And then I'm explaining that because my journey was like I wrote the thesis theoretically, in a way, not just theoretically, but that was one part. And then going out into the field, really seeing how it is expressed and how it can be used. And then going deeper in this was because I gave some, over the last years, I was invited to different organizations to give H-Shield workshops for their teams, how to use it, how to learn the basics of the H-Shields and then to use them for their teams, like NGOs. And then I heard about the H-Shields Masterclass and I was like, okay, I want to go there because I want to learn. It's in a way like going deeper for on my own journey and really get it, maybe bits, as I heard, like John is sharing things that he hasn't shared before from all the layers. So I want to go deeper into it to see how it's really, maybe more coming together, or in, I felt like connecting to the source in a way. And so it really in a way, making or being participating in the H-Heals Masterclass then really allowed me to see what is it what I've done already, where am I now, and how am I going to bring it further. So I can say it was just right for me at the moment where I am at, to see, okay, yes, it's already in me and I'm going further with it. So that's it.
That's wonderful. And I'm so curious how the principles assimilated in real life, say with the bike shop, and if you were able to see shifts in the culture of those businesses.
Yeah, it's interesting because one thing was that I could see it really depends from the CEO, it's a small shop, but still like from the person who is responsible for the shop, it depends if he is really wanting and able to let it in a way, is he able to do it. And I feel this was the most challenging thing of he being willing to change and to change things and to change his way of doing it, like the business as usual thing. Even though, like, from a human perspective, he was like, in private life, for him, it's of course clear to do those things, but in business, it was kind of, no, in business, we have to do it like that. I mean, I could see, for example, what came out of it was, I think one thing was the personal reflection really could start, like, for him personally, like, accompanying him a bit on his path. And of course, he's older than me, no? He's around 50 now, and I'm 30, or like beginnings of 30. So there was also this kind of thing to see, where is he in his life stage and what's coming for him also. Yeah, and I could see also how it's important, the communication, actually. How are we communicating as a team? How are we building connection? Is there room for check-in? Is there space for... How is community built here, like in the general day-to-day work life? And yeah, I mean, we did certain things, like really making daily check-in things, like circles and so on. And yeah, I don't know how it's now, because then I'm still in contact with them, but on a different level, or yeah, level now. So I could see it really helped structuring them, also to see where things missing and really helping them to structure. Also, how can it be structured more easily with the team and so on. But yeah, I think it's always, as I said, it depends on the people. Are they really willing to change, make the change within them?
Yeah, those are good reflections. We'll have to stay in touch on how we're doing with this work, you know, because it's really helpful to have reflections and collaboration with other people who are trying to do this. And, you know, we're all building bridges into new territory, right? But one of the things that we realized recently was that there's a felt sense of connection that becomes very palpable when you have people working in a connective way for a while. You know, it can take months, right? Regular meetings, but when it gets to that place where it gets really, where everybody feels really deeply safe, their creativity goes off the charts and their ability to function as a team goes to a very high level. And we had a retired McKinsey consultant come and work with us for 3.5 years. And he kind of looked at our whole cultural map. You know, he was just volunteering and donating time. He spent 15 hours a week with us for 3.5 years, Peter. And he was looking at all of our principles and our values and the way we do things. And he said, okay, you're going to have to structure this whole organization on H Shields, because you can't teach it in the world if you're not practicing it as an organization. And he said, and so you have to run your meetings with this culture, right? And because he's worked with like Mercedes-Benz executives and, you know, the International Red Cross, the City of London, like big companies all over the world, right? And he'd been doing it for 40 years. He was really a really skilled consultant. And he's a German national, comes from Germany. And he says to us one day, very fed up, about a half hour into our meeting, he says, if the meeting is going to start at 9:30, then tell me, don't tell me to get here at 9 if the meeting doesn't start till 9:30. I'm like, what are you talking about, Peter? He says, well, you know, first thing you do is you all have to have tea in the kitchen, and then you all have to talk and visit with each other. And then we sit down and then we have gratitude with each other for so many times, you know, and then the meeting doesn't really even start until 9:30. So if you want me, I'll show up at 9:30. I'm like, wait, whoa. You are the person who told me we have to run our company using the values that we teach. Yes, I did say that. I said, well, that's what we're doing. And he got really fed up. You know, we don't have time for this kind of response. Well, after a little bit, he decided, okay, maybe you really are doing that. I will, you know, give you the space to do that, and I will still show up before 9, right? So I think at a certain point, he dropped his resistance and he started to relax. And I would hear him laughing in the kitchen, making tea and talking, you know, and putting a hand on someone's shoulder and saying comforting things. He's an elder, you know, and just really sweet guy, you know. And then we go up into the office, and a couple of months into this, he says to us, I owe you all an apology. He said, because several months ago, I told you that you were wasting my time and that if the meeting didn't start until 9:30, then I shouldn't be here. But I was wrong. And I now see what you're doing is true. It really is working. And he says, there's something else I want to reflect back to you, because I've worked with some of the most high functioning teams in the business and NGO world. And I have never seen a team as high functioning as this one in terms of your creativity, your problem solving, your humor, the goodwill, you know, the trust. He said, keep doing what you're doing. You know, so it's a classic story, right? And it goes along with something that I really wanted to ask you when I was on your podcast a while back. Tell us the name of your podcast so people can find it. But it is in German. It's a German-speaking podcast. But tell us what your podcast is called, Julia.
It's called Podcast fürs Leben. And that means podcast for life. And it's podcast for deeper connection. Now it's also in English, as I had it with you. It's also, there are English episodes too.
Great. You see, you are a sister podcast, right? Because we're tracking connections and you're doing connection with, you know, podcast for life. It's a very, very, well, it's nice to be in your company. It's good to have colleagues out there. When I first started, I was mentored as a boy by my grandmothers and then by Tom Brown Jr. And so by the time I was like 18 or 19, I was at a very different level of awareness and connection than my peers that I grew up with, right? It was like I looked and dressed like everybody, but I did not have the same kind of mindset, you know, like my values had shifted entirely based on connection. And when I first started trying to mentor new people, I was working with children of all ages and some adults. And then later, after we'd worked with children for 12 years, I started to just focus on training staff because a lot of instructors had grown up through it. So they were naturally good at it, you know. And I started to recognize a pattern. And this pattern came from the tracking club in Washington State, where I didn't know these people and I just moved to Washington and I really felt the need to get to know them. And so we instituted this circle start. Maybe there's 20 people coming, right? And that includes the volunteers who are setting up the tracking stations. And they're all standing in a circle. And I really want to get to know them. So I say, okay, starting to my left, let's go all the way around. Who are you? Why are you here? What is tracking to you? And, you know, something you're feeling grateful for. And that was how we start. And it didn't take very long. You know, it was a couple minutes from each person. And some people would look at their watch like, I came here to learn tracking and what is this waste of time, you know? But I began to recognize there was patterns of behavior and we just never stopped doing that. And for years, we did that every time we got together. It just became our sort of emergent ritual and it worked really well. So why change it, right? And how much I learned about people, because I remember this woman who first showed up and she was so excited. Someone had read an article in a magazine and clipped out the article and gave it to Jen. And then Jen read it and she's like, oh my God, this sounds really interesting. And it was about tracking, but it was about a book by Tom Brown, right? So she found the book and she read the book. And so she comes to the tracking club and her hands are flying all over the place and her eyes are darting left and right. And she's talking really fast, all about tracking. But she goes on to say, but I have no idea what tracking is because I've never even really tracked yet, you know, but I'm so excited about it, right? So often new people would come in like that, bubbling over, eyes darting, hands flying, talking fast, you know, not making a lot of sense. And the person with the watch is looking at their watch and getting really annoyed with that person. That was like peak annoyance. Why am I wasting my time? I can't even call this person a beginner. I'm a tracker. You know, why? You know, like, so I started to recognize that pattern emerging too, right? So I started to see, well, people first get there, they're inspired. And then Jen, after a little while, she stopped talking so much. And she said, I realized that I'm talking way too much about tracking and I probably should just start tracking because I'm annoying all my friends at work. They avoid me at the water cooler now, because all I talk about is tracking and now they're avoiding me. So I think I have to stop talking and now I have to start doing something, right? So this is that second step. They become motivated and they actually go do stuff, whatever it is. If you give them good things to do, they'll practice them a lot. But if you don't give them good things to do, they'll figure out stuff to do, whether it's helpful or not. But at least they're doing something. They have to move. So I call that one motivation. So the first one is inspired. Second one is motivated. The third one, after they've been motivated for a while, then they start to get serious. And that's when they start looking at their watch. And they usually show up with gear. They got the hat and the furrowed brow. And they often have a tape measure hanging from their waist, you know, their belt. So you can see that they have a tape measure. Oh, and they've got a little pack. And in the little pack, they've got popsicle sticks and, you know, that they can stick on tracks, you know, and they've got string in there and they can do all these things. But they let you know, I'm a serious tracker, right? They usually often have a backpack, and in the backpack are all these books on tracking, right? And their notebook and their journal and all that, which, by the way, it's a stage and you got to do that, right? But they're most unpleasant people at that stage because they know what tracking is and they know why they're tracking and they know how to figure things out. And, you know, and they get like that. So I'll never forget it. Bubbly, arm flinging, eyes darting Jen, who then became Jen, who shows up early and gets there and walks all around and tries to help us set up stations and asks lots of questions. And we have to give her errands to go on so she can be satisfied. To Jen, the serious, she got the hat, she got a vest with pockets on it. You know, she went full regalia on us, you know, and I'm like, wow, she just went into that third place. And then after a couple of years of that, she got really humbled because tracking humbles you. The longer you track, the more likely you are to run into unsolvable mysteries and the more likely you are to discover that, as my friend Mark always says, you're always right when you track alone. So that you can actually literally get such strong ideas in your head, you can project them onto things that you're looking at and turn, for instance, a dog track into a mountain lion track or a dog track into a coyote track because you want to see a coyote, you want to see a mountain lion, right? And people will end up having a humbling experience invariably. And when they do have that humbling experience, they come back in that fourth stage. And in the fourth stage, they show up with their hat on backwards. There's a mark on their arm where the watch used to be. And it's a tan line. They've got their shoes off and their socks off and their cuffs are rolled up and their feet are already muddy, even before we start, because they've been playing in the river before we arrive, because they're just down there. I came over the hill one day and I looked down at the river. I got there an hour before everyone so I could get out and scout. Well, Jen was there with a bunch of her friends and I heard all this giggling. And I went down and looked over the edge down towards what they were doing. And they were in this part of the river where it backwaters on itself and it's shallow. And they're stalking around like herons, you know, stalking, imitating great blue herons, you know, and sneaking up on fish and things like that. And they're just giggling. And it was hilarious. So that's when they go into this place of, it's kind of like a surrender, but it's not quitting. It's something deeper. You know, it's like they go deeper. And I feel like it's at this fourth stage where connection really becomes a felt sense, right? And so I think about this company idea where most people are going to be maybe not even in that first stage. The boss is looking at his watch. We don't have time for connection, right? You know, commitment to that focus, you know, drive, focus, right? And I relay this story because, you know, what comes after that fourth one where they're much more relaxed and embodied in connection and basically enjoying themselves immensely. That next thing that happens is they want to be in service. They come through an epiphany. They usually have some kind of thing that they realize about the world and they want to help. And then they become, well, that's at that point, that's when Jen became an instructor and a very good one. And then after being an instructor for a little while, you know, she started to step back and then support other instructors. And she went naturally into that community helper stage. And now she's an elder at the school where that tracking club runs. And this is going back to the mid 90s, this journey, right? But she's so legit as an elder, right? She just went through this whole journey. And you said to me when I was talking to you last, that you realized that you went on this journey and you recognized these stages from your podcast for life. You saw yourself going on the profile journey. And I said, oh, I want to hear that story. Yes, we should do a podcast on that. And you very nicely said yes. And I'm just curious about like what you saw there in that journey.
I feel it started, of course, what I said, like, I don't know where the starting point, of course, is of my journey. But in a way, sure, I think one part of this Or maybe it's part of that. When I started, of course, before the podcast started, when I had the calling and I, yeah, almost 10 years ago when I started with the wilderness awareness, nature connection trainings, I inspired, like, this inspiration I had, this curiosity I had to go there, to be in nature and to go deeper into that, go deeper into connection, and to see that there is so much more than I knew it before, but there is more to experience and go deeper. And this, yeah, longing that I had, or this calling that I had over the whole, yeah, the years, then with what I said, like, which came into my master thesis, okay, I want to bring it there. It came, went also into another project that I did at the Lake Constance, like this community garden project for 2 years, which I initiated with our NGO. So there were different parts where I already did those, like where I anchored in a way, like started that, initiated that, and brought my inspiration into action, like really bring it in onto the ground and to the people and go there, like pioneers. We had that before already. Like, I feel often I'm in this, okay, I have this vision, I go there, I have, and even though I don't know how, we are just doing it, like, okay, we're doing it, I'm going there. And then with the project which I just said, with the bike shop, was also a next level or next step of bringing my vision forward, like bringing it into, yeah, business as usual. And then it's almost 2 years now that I had at that time a job, like a general job at an office, like in a sustainability office, doing also educational programs. And then I felt like, okay, no, I have to leave. I quit my job. I did that. And there really my deeper journey started, actually. I mean, before I already did projects also, as I said, workshops, seminars, and so on. But there I really decided, okay, it's time to go deeper and to deepen my profile journey, even though it maybe couldn't see it at that time, but it was clear. It got clear, okay, now the focus is there. And yeah, I mean, I started already with a podcast before, and then I had to let it go again. It was named differently also. And then I said, okay, now it's a new beginning of really making it now, really going for that. It was really a clear decision. Okay, now I'm going for that for my own business, but on a deeper level, like with this clarity, even though I didn't know all the different steps of it. And this was then with my podcast, for example, which I started. Actually, I have to remember, I think it was last year. Yeah, last year in spring, I started my podcast, and it was like, okay, just talk about the last, or like the first series of my podcast was all about myself in a way, but it was my connection journey. Okay, how am I dealing with all those things that come up? How am I going into connection? How am I dealing with that? Okay, going into nature, though. So there were podcast episodes about connection. Of course, all is about connection, but it was like, how am I connecting? And not just about projects, but really about how is my connection journey with nature, with other people, with myself. So it was the whole thing of, in a way, telling stories, really, about my connection journey. And this is actually what I just realized afterwards when I went through the episodes again, and I thought, like, interesting. I just talked about my whole connection journey, which I made in order to really come into my own embodiment, or like it's part of the embodiment. I mean, I didn't plan that. It wasn't planned to do that, but it just came naturally out of it to see, okay, actually it's part of my own embodiment journey to all of what I learned before, all of what I know it's calling me. Okay, I bring it now to myself to see how is it really, how am I living it? So actually, my first podcast series was about how am I living connection on all different levels, with the joy and ease and with the pain and the struggles and everything, of course. And also being very honest. I mean, I showed up very authentically in my podcast. And interesting enough is now, this year, I shifted because I felt okay. I had to take a pause with the podcast because I felt like something is changing. Last year, I had almost every two weeks, I had a new episode. And then I felt like, okay, now something is changing. And as the natural cycles, there comes a time where it's a pause, in a way, like a pause, like something where it's nothing. And we have to let go. And I felt that. And then I was like, okay, what's coming next? And I mean, I had this vision already before that at a certain point, I will make interviews, have conversations with other people. And actually this year, I'm not sure. I think I haven't had any solo episode because it is now differently. It's really about going out and connecting the people, bringing the community together, like really seeing what's already there and like tending the bigger fire. And yeah, it's interesting to see that, no? It's like really, it just came naturally. And also this year from my own journey, actually, now where I'm at, I was invited to do now, like maybe it's already 2 months ago now, that I was invited to support a project where I'm tending like the space. And so I can really see that, okay, I'm on my journey and now I'm coming more into that next stage and phase where I'm in service and I'm invited to different places and I'm just going there.
That's really cool. And I just want a presence for people that may not be familiar with the profile journey and the Eight Shields design principles. Is that, you know, John was describing it really well with a story, but to say it more kind of linearly, there's these stages on a journey of growth that we can track. And Yulia is describing that, you know, beginning of the journey where there's inspiration, you know, and the calling, and then moving into motivation, and then that really focused place. And I hear you, Yulia, describing that focus place as really being your own internal process or your own personal process of connection. And then the next stage in the profile journey in the natural design cycles is taking a break, taking a pause, wandering, relaxing. And that reflection that you're describing is just sounds so natural. And that I just want to lift up your awareness, your self-awareness of the change, right? Of being able to acknowledge there's a change, because often we are conditioned to keep going, you know, the same direction because this is what's working. But if we're really tuning into ourselves and in our own natural cycle, there is that place for a pause after strong focus. You know, it's the afternoon nap after focused work in the morning. And then again, in the profile journey, as it is laid out in the Eight Shields design principles, the next step is that harvest celebration, gathering the village and stepping into service, being helpful for others. And how could we do that, right? If we didn't have, as Yulia's story, if she didn't have that beginning time of, you know, exploring her own material, right? What is connection? How do I relate to connection and finding in herself? She couldn't step into a place of service, right? If she didn't have that. Really beautiful. And I guess my question is, I hear some of this in what you've already shared, Yulia, but how has it served you to look at the design principles as they've been laid out, like, for example, in the Eight Shields Masterclass, and be able to look at that big picture and say, I hear you saying like, oh, wow, look, I did that. I didn't realize that. And here I am in this place. And so now that you're in this place of what we would call sunset for this part of your journey, how does that awareness, you know, support you as you move into this next year?
That's a big question. I have, first of all, to add something, because I found it interesting when I listened to your reflection or like the overview you just gave. For me, it was really also the internalization of really letting it sink into myself deeper. So all of what I learned and heard and I found like it's really this phase of internalization. So if it's internalized, embodied within myself, really gone through, so then it's really this like, okay, now I'm in service. Okay, now I can serve. It's not like automatically that I'm in service. It's not to say that, but it's the pathway to service, maybe. At least for me, it feels like that. And maybe this also connects to your question, because also when I listen to your words, for me, it's so important to see. And I had it already in mind in a way, always. I mean, of course, it's kind of my compass. I always have it in mind, like the model and the, and for me, it's not just, it's not a model. Like, okay, it's like, not like just a model. It's really like my, how to say, I mean, the HE is really like the orientation for me to see, okay, where am I at? And then it's really more easy, or like easier for me to see, okay, now I'm in that phase or stage in life and so on. And for me, it's important to see also the axis, because also when I heard you saying what the overview was, not from the different stages, to see, yeah, if I'm in this southwest, so afternoon time, there's always this importance to have the access to, with the north, or like the connection to the northeast, because I know it's important to see this connection, to have the, even though, for example, if I'm in this phase of I don't know how it continues, or maybe better to say to let it. No, I think this is the point actually, to be able to say, yeah, it's important to have this phase of internalization of embodiment. For me, at least, it helps to see, there's a connection to the northeast shield, which is, yeah, the connection to spirit, to the unknown, to the mystery, to what's bigger, and to see, yeah, so I can dive deeper into the deeper layers of myself, because I know I'm connected to something bigger, so I can dive deeper into that phase. I don't know if it's logical or not logical, but comprehensive what I'm saying. And so to your question, can you maybe ask it again? Because I forgot a bit.
Well, I think you actually answered it in a good way, but if you'd like to say more, the question was, how does it help you now, knowing, having an idea where you are in that profile journey? And I heard you say to look at that other end of the axis, but if you had more to share, that is welcome.
Yes, I have one more to add to that. Yeah, I think, of course, the most important thing is to have it as an orientation, of course, and knowing the orientation in general, to know where I'm at, is very important for me, because it gives me a frame where to go. It's kind of like having a North Star to know, okay, where am I at? And it also helps me to see, for example, being in the sunset phase in the West Shield, knowing the axis, for example, the East. Okay, to be in service, to be helpful, it also needs that I'm in connection, I attend the connection to myself, for example. I look that I'm also still connected with myself. So this is, for example, what I'm realizing now talking about it with you. I realize that, because that's for me the whole thing, and the importance and the kind of, I don't know if treasure is the right term at the moment, but kind of why it's so important to use it, and to why it's such a beautiful, I don't know, it's not beautiful, it's more. I don't have any words for that. Why it's so important for me, at least, and I feel for connection and for health and happiness, actually, to use the eight shields, because it's, yeah, it just makes sense. I don't have more to add to that.
Oh, that's so cool. I loved that whole conversation between the two of you and your reflection. But the one thing you were saying you know, when I'm in the Southwest, you know, I'm in that time where I'm in like what we would call Indian summer. Like, it's not quite summer anymore, but it's not quite autumn. Or you're in the afternoon, you know, the late afternoon, when it's a good time to take that cat nap, when you feel really ready to just relax on the ground in the grass and be like, oh, yeah. Not a thought in the head. You know, you can't even come up with a thought. It's kind of like, oh, why would I think? It's so cool here right now. You know, very in the moment. That Southwest direction represents, and of course, this is in Northern Hemisphere. So I apologize to the people in the Southern Hemisphere. That would be Northwest for you. So let's not confuse everybody. But in that Southwest, that time, you know, that is the time when Ingwe came up with this model in the beginning. He's like, okay, everybody can figure out where the sun rises and where the sun sets. So we can have organizing principles that relate to sunset and sunrise. Everyone can relate to that. And everyone can relate to where the sun is at midday, he said, you know, so we can have that. And he said, of course, here in the Northern Hemisphere, that's south. And he said, we might all be sleeping, but if we could see the sun from the same spot at midnight, it would be north. So he says, these will be the four directions, he says, but we have to represent earth and sky. And so Southwest will be earth, like, and he literally drew the XYZ axis on a piece of paper, said, John, you must remember this geometry thing that everyone could not stand, but we can organize using this because everyone has learned this and they'll all relate, you know? So he was like trying to find that bridge already back then, right? So here's these modern children growing up in New Jersey that maybe never saw a sunrise, maybe saw a sunset, more likely, but maybe not, right? And it was amazing when we started to really work with children, how many had never seen the sunrise or the sunset. And Ingwe, who'd grown up in the deep wilderness of Kenya with the Akamba tribe, he was so deeply connected to the earth and was so aware of how these people were aware of where the sun was all the time, you know? And so he wanted to base the model on that because, you know, east and west and north and south represent the X and the Y. The Z axis is that southwest, northeast. The southwest side, lower left side, points to the earth. Therefore, the other side points to the sky, which is Yulia's beautiful reference, which, you know, archetypally, when we think about all the things that we can't see, but we know they're there. Like, I'm sitting here outside in the shade on my patio. I can feel the breeze, but I can't see it. I know it's there, but I can't pin it down. This is what Northeast represents, right? And you said in your story so beautifully that you would get to this place where you don't even know how you're going to do it, but you have a clear vision. And so you just trusted that, which came through creativity. And that is the Northeast. That's the essence of the Northeast. And so I could sit here and say for the age that you are at in your life, how much it hopes it gives to me that someone your age is already trusting vision in that way and working in this way. And we need more people your age and younger to know this, because there's so much hope in a model that works with the flow of nature. You know, it's like, as you also very beautifully described, I didn't even know that it was happening to me until afterwards. And I looked back and then I realized that it had naturally unfolded, because I honestly believe that when you work with these natural nature connection, people connection principles, you awaken that part of your being, which you were born with, that wanted to do that and was waiting for the people to help that unfold. But very few people get that kind of mentoring support anymore. So, you know, that's why this is so important, you know, what you're doing. And we're really, really glad to support you and have you here and lift you up. And so the last thing I wanted to say was something else that you had reflected after Sarah asked you. And you said, oh, I didn't even realize that until I just spoke about it out loud, right? Which is really important to lift up, because yesterday I was listening to my mentor, Tom Brown, recordings of a class he taught 7 years ago that I'm going to assist with this week. So I'm just trying to get into getting into the spirit of the class, in essence, right? So I know what part I can play and how I could be supportive. And he said, you know, my mentor, grandfather, he used to tell me that 10% of what you get out of something is the actual experience, and that 90% will really come from the debrief. Talk about it afterwards with someone who you trust and hear yourself say things, because that's when you'll really learn the thing, not from doing it. You know, like, let's give it an example. Like, you're trying to make a fire without matches using a spindle and a fireboard with your hands, called the hand drill, right? And you go to make it work, you know, and this was the example he was talking about, and it doesn't work, and you're kind of frustrated, you know? So then you go and you sit with your friend, in his case, Rick, and then you relive the experience. And maybe it only took you 15 minutes to have that experience, but you might talk to the other person for 45 minutes or more, and then you'll have this epiphany. Oh, that's what I did. And now they go back and, oh, all of a sudden he gets a fire because he had a realization, but he wouldn't have had the realization if all he did was keep trying. You know, so that's like getting stuck in that South profile. I just have to work and work and work and work. But no, grandfather taught them, you know, stop. If you have trouble, just take a rest, go into the Southwest, come together and talk about it, lift it up, share the story. Because that's when you'll have the insights, right? And that's that, again, that wheel journey there. So I wanted to lift that up too, because many people think, oh, if I just go through the motions and then keep my mouth quiet, I've checked it off. But actually, no, we get so much more by reflecting with each other, and our understanding deepens, our connection gets stronger. And so important, this routine of sharing story, especially in a container of trust. You have to have a container of trust or it's not worth it. So any reflections there, Yulia?
Yeah, actually, I just thought about what you shared. I think it was in the Eight Shields Masterclass. And I can see that again now, how important it's for all of us, our sharing, our stories. Because for me, it's important because I can see myself, or I can get a deeper insight from me sharing my story with you, listening and reflecting it back, and also how it's not just for me, because it's for all of us. We need that, and it doesn't make any sense to hold it back. It's really the thing we were talking about more at the beginning, about like, oh, there's no time for it, we need to work. And it's like, but it's part of life, and it's important that we have this time in the day, or whenever we come together. We need those time for sharing, for listening, for, of course, deep listening and reflecting it on a deeper level. And yeah, I'm so grateful to know that, to have learned that and to know that. That this is so important. And of course, it came through your through your doing it, or sharing it, learning it, giving it further. And I'm so touched by it, because it also gives me so much deeper sense of what I'm doing and sharing and contributing, that it's important for life and for our aliveness of humans, and giving our gifts, actually. Yeah, so thank you so much.
And truly, that's the place where creative genius emerges, right? So what better, where is it more needed? You know, I mean, it's needed everywhere, of course, but also in business. And so just big gratitude to you, Yulia, for what you're bringing, and, you know, being a pioneer, for being brave and having deep trust and listening. And what I really get from you, you know, you were kind of alluding to struggling for words earlier, but you're actually embodying so much information that's coming through just in the simple words, right? Like, the words actually can't touch the feeling that's moving through you. And for me, that just is another reflection of how natural cycles are incredibly natural. And when we lean into them and we feel the magic, right? Or we remember the magic of, oh, I get to be natural, and it's productive, and it's generative, and I'm happy. You know, it really is that, right? So it's wonderful to see where you're taking this work and just how you've integrated into your life personally and professionally. And can't wait to hear how everything moves forward, you know, this year of you moving more into service to others and bringing what you've embodied and sharing it in a way of connection that is inevitably generating genius, not only for yourself, but for others. So maybe in 6 months we talk again. But really want to just say thank you so much for being here with us and for sharing.
Yeah, I echo that, Sarah. And I also, you know, I acknowledge that, yes, I really tried to help others by, you know, sharing it with others. But if it wasn't for, you know, Ingwe and Tom Brown and my grandmothers and Jake and Judy Swamp and all the people that worked together on this, you know, I wouldn't be able to share it either. And so many of them are now ancestors, right? And it's like, I like to think of it as a legacy for connection. So I received this from my elders when I was a boy and brought it out in the world, you know, like you did, like you're doing now, when I was your age, actually. And, you know, now you're doing it. And, you know, my elders are gone, most of them. And now I'm going to be the elder, you know, and who's coming after us, right? We have to ensure that this legacy keeps going because there's so many beautiful gifts in this. And as you said, you know, it's health and happiness, right? What more do you want? And there's nowhere where this doesn't work, really. You know, I've tried it in every setting, you know, in all different kinds of funny ways. I ran a restaurant based on it and it worked so beautifully. So it's so much fun to play with as well. And it makes it all so much more joyful. And last but not least, I'll just tell people that if you're interested in a little bit more in this profile journey we've been talking about, and you don't have a copy of Coyote's Guide to Connecting with Nature, you can find a chapter in there. And Aidan will put the link to that and what pages it's in case you have Coyote's Guide and you forgot that it was in there and you want to go and read about it again. So that's that. And I just thank you both so much. And Yulia, yes, every 6 months we'll check in until, you know, until I'm an ancestor, then you'll be the one who checks in with the next generation every 6 months. And we'll just keep this going. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.